good evening, everyone. This is Lou Cavalli. It's good to be back. Had to have a couple repeats. I was under the weather with something that could have been a bad cold. I got a little test kit at Walmart. It said it was COVID. But I don't know how dependable those are. Anyway, I had a bit of coughing. And even though last week I didn't feel too bad, I thought the coughing was such that it would just be very, very irritating to everybody. So I did a couple of repeats. But now we're back to live and got some good articles today. Really, I've got more than I can handle. But I'll give you some of the what I thought were the most interesting ones. And we'll begin with something that my late wife Elizabeth and I would talk about from time to time, and that is artificial meat. Now, of course, they don't call it artificial meat. That doesn't sound too good, does it? One of the companies, and I think it might be the one that Bill Gates was involved with, was called Beyond Meat. Now, I haven't been a connoisseur of that kind of artificial meat. When I get a cheeseburger, I like to think it's a cheeseburger. Now, when I get a fish stick, I kind of like it to be real fish. But for a while, this was all the, you know, what everybody was talking about, this artificial meat, plant-based meat, to use the more proper name. But they seem to have fallen on hard times. At least this one company has. Here's an article from Reuters, dated just a few days back, October 13th, 2025. The title says, Beyond Meat Slumps, as shareholders agonize over debt exchanged offer. Again, this is October 13th from Reuters. Beyond Meat shares tumbled as much as 58% on Monday after the plant-based meat maker announced an early settlement of an exchange offer with its bondholders through the issue of fresh shares and notes to manage its debt. Once a Wall Street darling, the company has in recent years struggled with changing consumer sentiment about taste, around taste, pride, and processing. Make that price and processing, especially in the U.S. Shares of the company, which disclosed about $1.3 billion in debt. And that's with a B, billion. $1.3 billion, that's hard to imagine, in debt at the end of 2024. Well, last trading at $1.03, the stock hit a record high of $239.71 in July of 2019, just months after a blockbuster debut. Beyond Meat will issue about $208.7 million in new 7% convertible notes due in 2030. And around 316 million shares to participating investors after nearly 97% of its bondholders agreed to the swap. Well, a lot of this from that point on in the article is rather technical. Some of it's a little bit beyond my understanding. But to make a long story short, they're in trouble. They don't want to use the word bankruptcy. I saw that in a couple of other articles. Saying, no, we're not going bankrupt. But it does make you wonder. Get those numbers again. The stock was selling for $239 in July 2019. Now it's about $1.03 a share. Quite a fall. Well, a lot of people, I guess, are like Elizabeth was and like I am, that they like meat to be meat and not to be plants. You may remember, too, and I don't have the article in front of me. We had a good article, I think it was from Natural News, some time back when Elizabeth was still active and well, that talked about the drawbacks to some of this plant-based food. The one thing I do remember is they used an awful lot of pea protein to give the protein that would be plant-based protein because it wouldn't have any meat protein. And it seems to me that that was, along with several other ingredients, was hard on the body. I'll have to dig that out again and give you a quick synopsis of it. Okay, so that was in Reuters, dated October 13th, Beyond Meat Slumps, etc. Now we'll move over to Fox News. Blue City street takeover suspects torched police cruiser in, quote, hell-bent, unquote, attack on cops. That from the union chief. And the summation says, over 100 people involved in early morning incident that destroyed police cruiser with flames. This is by Adam Sades, Fox News, and dated October 14th, 2025, very recent. And guess where all this was taking place? Why, in my old home state of Massachusetts, and in the city near where I grew up as a kid, Boston. And it says, Boston Police Patrolmen's Association President Larry Calderon told Fox News Digital that the street takeover that took place on October 5th got, quote, out of control, unquote. I think that probably sums it up pretty well. The president of a union, and this is now the article itself, the president of a union that represents Boston police officers said the people who took part in the recent street takeover in the city were hell-bent on attacking law enforcement officials. According to the Boston Police Department, over 100 people were involved in the takeover that involved street racing just after 2 a.m. on October 5th. Officers found more than 100 people trying to attack police cruisers with fireworks, cones, poles, and other items. One police cruiser was destroyed by flames and needed to be towed away from the area. Boston Police Patrolmen's Association President Larry Calderon told Fox News Digital, those participating in the street takeover were focused on attacking the officers. Calderon said, quote, they knew what they were going to do, and they were hell-bent on attacking the officers. But that is not an everyday occurrence, unquote. Calderon said that the individuals took the street takeover to four different areas before ending in the city's South End area. And Calderon said what happened last weekend got out of control. It went through four different communities, ended up here at a couple of locations in Boston. In each location that they went to in this past incident, it appears as though they got more aggressive. And when they ended up in the downtown South End section of Boston, that pretty much, in our opinion, looked premeditated. If you are coming from outside the city of Boston, you're coming in to terrorize or assault police officers or create havoc, we don't want you here, Calderon said. And just jumping down a little bit, Simran Nahatra, who witnessed the street takeover, told Channel 25 News, quote, it was like a riot. We saw someone get arrested, and we looked to our right, and there was this cop car on fire. It was really scary. I was like, I don't know why it was so loud. And everyone's screaming, and it went on for an hour or two. Two people were arrested during the street takeover. Julian Bowers, 18, of Cumberland, Rhode Island, and William Cantwell, 19, of Warwick, Rhode Island. They were charged with assault and battery on a police officer, resisting arrest, disorderly conduct, and malicious destruction of property over $1,200. Bowers is accused of throwing objects at police officers and at cruisers, while Cantwell allegedly used a pole to smash a police cruiser. The two men pleaded not guilty, and the judge set bail at $500 for Bowers and $1,000 for Cantwell, and both were seen fist bumping after lending the bail amount, CBS News reported. Prosecutors had asked for $15,000 cash bail for Bowers and $20,000 for Cantwell. So that's what's happening in my old home state. As I said, I grew up only about 25 miles outside on the north side of Boston. Well, I think that bail says it all. If you set the bail so low, you're basically saying, it's no big deal. Sure, you can smash up a few police cars. The judges don't care. They'll just let you out with a minimal bail. Am I being too nasty? I don't think so. Maybe that's why there's so much crime, because it's a revolving door. We all know that. A criminal commits a crime, And unless it's awfully, awfully serious, he's probably out the next day, or maybe the same day. Well, once again, that was from Fox News. Blue City Street takeover, suspects, torch police cruiser, etc. October 14th. Well, what else do we have here? Let's switch gears a little bit. Oh, we've been talking a lot over the last many months about boys who want to be girls, girls who want to be boys. Here's one from LifeSite News. Federal judge says Virginia school cannot suspend boy who objected to girl in his locker room. This is by Emily Manchier Racina, Saturday, October 11th, 2025. A federal judge on Friday granted a motion for a preliminary injunction against Loudoun County Public Schools, blocking the suspension of a student for objecting to the presence of a, quote, transgender, unquote, girl in the boys' locker room. The student's suspension must remain halted as litigation continues, ordered the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Virginia, America First Legal, announced on Friday. The court order also prevents LCPS at Loudoun County Public Schools from logging an incident of Title IX sexual harassment on the personal files of both the student client of America First Legal and the Founding Freedoms Law Center. Also, another male student who was suspended following a, quote, sexual harassment, unquote, allegation by the LCPS school. The order follows a previous decision in September that temporarily blocked the suspension. As covered by LifeSite News in a video taken by a girl who identifies as a male at Loudoun County Stonebridge High School, three boys can be heard expressing to each other their discomfort with her presence. Loudoun County Public Schools subsequently launched a Title IX investigation against the boys based on that video. I'm going to jump down a little bit here. ABC Channel 7, WJLA, reported that after a month-long investigation, two of the three boys were punished by a 10-day suspension for, quote, sexual harassment, unquote, and, quote, sexual-based discrimination, unquote, ordered to have no contact with a girl, and to meet with school officials to, quote, determine a corrective action plan, unquote. The third boy has already been removed from the school and out of state by the parents, but would face a similar punishment if he returned. And the family remains fearful of this mark in his academic record, impairing the college plans, or his college plans. Okay, let's see now. I'll just read the closing paragraph here. Commenting on Friday's court order, blocking one boy's suspension, Victoria Cobb, president of Founding Freedoms Law Center, said, quote, we are pleased the court sees the importance of halting a wrongful punishment so our client continues his education and both boys are ultimately vindicated, unquote. More of this craziness. All right, again, that was from LifeSite News. The date was October 11th, 2025. Now we'll switch gears to automobiles. This is from the Washington Times. Maybe some of you have got an electronic car. I haven't. They're a little bit out of my price range at the present time. Plus, where I live, I don't know where I go to charge it up. Now, do I know, and this might just be my own lack of knowledge, I don't know how far you can go in one charge. I don't know what speeds you can go at. I don't know really a whole lot of the information. To me, it seems like an awful lot of the information on this is just not being disseminated to the general public. But let's see what this says. This is in the Washington Times. By Michelle Chapman, Associated Press, Tuesday, October 14th, 2025. The title says, GM to take a $1.6 billion hit. Yes, that's right. Billion with a B, not million. Billion. $1.6 billion hit as tax incentives for EVs are slashed and emission rules ease. caught a negative impact of $1.6 billion in its next quarter after tax incentives for electric vehicles were slashed by the U.S. and rules governing emissions are relaxed. Shares fell less than 2% before the opening bell Tuesday. The EV tax credit ended last month. The clean vehicle tax credit was worth $7,500 for new EVs and up to $4,000 for used ones. This is Lou speaking now. I guess if you are a very wealthy individual, you can afford these. Because if you're super wealthy, you may not worry too much about a mere $7,500 if you're a billionaire or a millionaire. But to the average citizen, like probably most of you and me, $7,500 is a good chunk to be taken off the price. However, what if the price is $50,000? That still is out of my league. Anyway, let's get back to the article. General Motors, which has led the way among U.S. automakers with plans to convert production to an electric fleet of vehicles, said in a regulatory filing on Tuesday that it will have to book charges that include non-cash impairment and other charges of $1.2 billion due to EV capacity adjustments. There's also $400 million in charges, mostly related to contract cancellation fees and commercial settlements associated with EV-related investments. And it warned that it may take additional hits as it adjusts production. Let's see now. The company said that its EV capacity realignment doesn't impact its retail portfolio of Chevys, GMC, and Cadillac EV is currently in production, and that it expects those models to remain available to consumers. EVs were considered to be the future of the U.S. automotive industry. In 2021, GM said that it planned to have more than half of its North American and China factories to be capable of making electric vehicles by 2030. It also pledged at the time to increase its investment and EV charging networks by nearly $750, that's $750 million, through 2025. Yet, U.S. automakers are being hampered in some of their long-term planning with drastic changes in economic and environmental policy from one administration to the next. Well, maybe so. Now, of course, this is Lou putting my 2 cents worth in. And again, let me just say this is from the Washington Times on Tuesday, October 14th. GM to take a $1.6 billion hit. That's the basic part of the title. If you're like me, I have a lot of questions. I've already stated a couple of them. How far can I go on one charge? Where do I charge it? I'm in a rural area. I guess there are charging stations around, but I have yet to see any. How long does it take to charge? How much do I pay for a charge? Now, these are questions that would go through my mind even if I could afford one of these electric vehicles, which I can't. Not at this present time. And I can go to a gas station that is about 1 mile from my house, from where I'm speaking from right now. And I can fill it up with gas in approximately 2 minutes, maybe three. Could I charge the car that fast? Oh, I don't think so. And I hear all these horror stories about how much new batteries would cost if the batteries ever go bad. I think someone quoted a figure of $25,000. That's a lot of money. I had to have a new engine put in my automobile. Not that there was anything wrong with the automobile, but about 5 years ago, I already had 300,000 miles on it. So I can't complain. I certainly got my money's worth. That was a Chevy Impala. And I think I paid, labor included, maybe $6,000. Well, that is nothing compared to getting new batteries in an electric vehicle. Now, people will say, well, the costs will come down once everybody starts getting them. Yes, maybe so. But I still have those questions that I would like answered before I would ever even consider an electric vehicle. And so far, maybe I just have not looked in the right places. I have not seen any such answers. Okay, let's shift gears again. Now, we just went through yesterday, as I record this. I'm actually recording this on October 14th. That's my usual day, Tuesdays, to record the program. This is also from the Washington Times. We had a holiday yesterday, celebrated yesterday. The traditional day would have been Sunday, Columbus Day. When I was a boy, I always got Columbus Day off from school. Now, when I was a teacher here in Maryland, and I don't think I ever did, we always just had school as usual. But it is a national holiday. There was no mail yesterday on the day it was celebrated, the 13th. I didn't go to the bank, but I think they were closed anyway if I had gone. But, like so many traditional things, it's under attack. So this is from the Washington Times, dated October 13th, 2025, by Valerie Richardson. The title says, "Legislation seeks to save Columbus Day from being replaced by Indigenous Peoples Day." Now, let me say right at the beginning, I am in great sympathy with Native American people, American Indians. And I don't think there's anything wrong with having a day to celebrate their contributions. They were treated badly, and really it was a genocide against them. But it wasn't like Nazi Germany where people set out to kill them. It was an unfortunate clash of two cultures, one more advanced. And let me read what this says here. You can form your own opinions. Republicans celebrated the Columbus Day holiday Monday by sailing to the rescue of the long-derided Italian explorer. Representative Mike Rulli, Ohio Republican, introduced legislation timed to the Monday holiday that would prohibit federal funds from flowing to states and local governments that have replaced Columbus Day with Indigenous Peoples Day. Mr. Rulli said, quote, "This is not about inclusion. It is about erasing the contributions of millions of Italian Americans who helped build this nation." Rulli said in a statement to Channel 21 WFMJ-TV. He went on to say, "Indigenous peoples deserve recognition, but this day was created to honor us," unquote. He added that Italian Americans fought to be recognized as part of the American story, and we will not allow their memory or their day of honor to be erased, unquote. The bill was introduced shortly after President Trump honored Columbus Day in a robust proclamation, breaking with the Biden administration's tradition of recognizing both Columbus Day and Indigenous Peoples Day on the second Tuesday in October. The White House proclamation celebrated the Italian navigator as an original American hero who, quote, paved the way for the ultimate triumph of Western civilization less than three centuries later on July 4, 1776, unquote, with his 1492 voyage to the New World. And I'm questioning, too, what I just read. It says Columbus Day on the second Tuesday. I believe that should be the second Monday, because we did, after all, celebrate it yesterday on Monday, as I record this. Now, Senator Ted Cruz, Texas Republican, and Mr. Rulli have also called for, quote, immediate action, unquote, to restore Christopher Columbus Circle near Union Station, saying the plaza is plagued by, quote, degenerates, clutter, signage, and debris that detract from its intended purpose and historic integrity, unquote. Now, for those not familiar with the city of Boston, and I wasn't myself until I came to live in the greater Boston area for a number of years, I should say the greater Washington area, Union Station is the main railroad station for Washington, D.C., has been for, I think, well more than a century. And this statue of Columbus is right outside of Union Station, or at least close to it. Now, here we have a quote in a letter from Interior Secretary Doug Burgum. Quote, "The Columbus Fountain, located in front of Union Station, has long served as a symbolic landmark, honoring the spirit of discovery, exploration, and cultural exchange that helped shape our nation. Unfortunately, the fountain and plaza had fallen into disrepair, the Friday letter said. The Republicans asked Mr. Burgum to undertake a, quote, full restoration, unquote, of the plaza, including the central fountain, which has been broken for two decades. They also said they will pursue legislation to transfer control of the plaza to the Department of Transportation, which owns Union Station, calling it a more natural fit. Restoring Columbus Day to its former glory won't be easy. The federal holiday, honoring the general born seaman, has been losing ground for years to Indigenous Peoples Day. As many as 221 cities have either jettisoned Columbus Day entirely in favor of Indigenous Peoples Day or replaced the two holidays, I should say, placed the two holidays on the same day, according to the Rename Columbus Day campaign. In six states, Columbus Day shares the calendar with Indigenous Peoples Day or another holiday honoring American Indian heritage, including Montana, which marked its first dual Columbus-Indigenous Peoples holiday on Monday. And it goes on to say about some other states. And Mr. Rooley, who again was, I believe, an Ohio Republican, if I remember correctly. Yes. Representative Rooley said in his bill, dubbed the Italian Heroes and Heritage Act, it will seek to preserve Columbus Day and the achievements of Italian Americans. He said in a Monday post on X, this day is a tribute to exploration, faith, and family, the same values that built our nation and continue to bind us together. Honoring Columbus Day means honoring the spirit of preservation. Honoring Columbus Day means honoring the spirit of perseverance and pride that defines the American story, unquote. Well, there are pros and cons to that. I know that Columbus did do some bad things to the Native Americans, particularly, I think, on his last of his voyages. But on the other hand, he was a courageous fellow who persevered and discovered the New World. So it's a complex situation, I guess is the best way to say it. Now, we'll jump to the Gateway Pundit. That, again, was from the Washington Times on October 13th, Monday. And now, also from October 13th, but this time from the Gateway Pundit, we have a quote from one of the hostages. And the quote says, when Trump won the presidency, they stopped spitting on me. Those are the words of a former hostage, and he tells how Hamas was scared of Trump. Hamas barbarians abducted Omer Shem Tov from the Nova Music Festival on October 7, 2023. He was held by Hamas for 505 days. Former Israeli hostage Omer Shem Tov told a reporter after his release that Hamas was very scared of Trump. And that's an exact quote. Hamas was very scared of Trump. He also said they wanted Kamala to win. After he was kidnapped, Shem Tov's parents were among the founding members who formed the Hostages and Missing Families Forum. Since his release, now I don't think this was one of the ones in the last couple of days. This was some time back. Since his release, Omer has traveled the world to advocate for the release of the remaining hostages. Yeah, so that would be some time ago. He was released. And the article goes on to say, Omer Shem Tov recently spoke about his ordeal as a Hamas hostage. Omer said, quote, as soon as Donald Trump was elected, they understood that he wanted to bring us back home. He added, so immediately the way they treated me changed. He got me out. He got the hostages out. Before, we felt like nothing was happening, you know? And I remember, for me, there, ever since he came into the role, they were very scared of him. The reporter says, who? And Omer says, the terrorists. We're afraid of Trump. They run a catalog of TV shows. Reporter, you talk politics with them? Homer, yeah, they wanted Kamala to be elected. But as soon as Donald Trump was elected, they understood that he wanted to bring us back home. So immediately, the way they treated me changed. I can say this, that when Trump became president, the way they treated us changed. For me personally, that is what I saw. The reporter asked, do you think because that is when they anticipated that a deal would soon come? And that is why they gave you more food? And Omar Shamtov says, exactly, more food, treated me better. You know, stop cursing, stop spitting on me. And those are the words of a hostage who was released some time back. And as I'm speaking this at this moment, hostages have just been released yesterday and perhaps some today as well, and back with their loved ones. Of course, the bodies of some of those who were killed have not yet been returned. And Hamas has not yet been totally annihilated, if they ever will be. So we don't know for sure, but it was a tremendous achievement for Donald Trump to help negotiate this release and the ceasefire. That, again, was from the Gateway Pundit, October 13th, Monday. Okay, we'll switch gears again, this time back to the Great Plains. And we have here LifeSite News. Judge rules North Dakota can ban transgender mutilation of children. And the summary at the top says, Judge Jackson Lofgren ruled that North Dakota's ban on underage gender transitions does not violate the state constitution, nor any concerns about the risks they pose to children. Again, this is from LifeSite News, October 10th, 2025, by Calvin Freeberger. And it reads, North Dakota's ban on gender transition procedures for confused children is constitutional and can be enforced. South Central District Court Judge Jackson Lofgren ruled on Wednesday. In April 2023, then-Governor Doug Burgum signed House Bill 1254 prohibiting transgender surgeries or hormones for minors. Violators could face up to 10 years in prison or $20,000 in fines. Opponents quickly sued, and Lofgren ruled that November, that the law could remain in effect while the case made its way through the courts. This week, the case was resolved on the merits, with Lofgren determining the law does not violate the North Dakota Constitution. His order recognized, quote, legitimate ongoing debate regarding the safety and effectiveness of youth gender transitions, and went on to say, quote, where there is uncertainty, deference is given to the legislature to decide where the line should be drawn. And these are the words of the North Dakota Attorney General. The North Dakota legislature considered this matter thoroughly and determined that medical gender transition procedures and protocols cannot be appropriately undertaken for minors. North Dakota Attorney General Drew Wrigley responded, the district court's, and this is a quote, the district court's thorough and thoughtful decision makes it clear that our elected legislative body appropriately reached this medical health determination and passed legislation that is constitutionally sound. And that ends that quote. The article goes on, a large body of evidence shows that affirming, and that's in quotes, affirming gender confusion carries serious harms, especially when done with impressionable children who lack the mental development, emotional maturity, and life experience to consider the long-term ramifications of the decisions being pushed in them, or full knowledge about the long-term effects of life-altering, physically transformative, and often irreversible surgical and chemical procedures. Studies find that more than 80% of children suffering gender dysphoria outgrow it on their own by late adolescence, and that, quote, transition unquote, procedures fail to resolve gender-confused individuals' heightened tendency to engage in self-harm and suicide, and even exacerbated, including by reinforcing their confusion and neglecting the actual root causes of their mental strife. Many oft-ignored detransition as a test of the physical and mental harm of reinforcing gender confusion, as well as to the bias and negligence of the medical establishment on the subject, many of whom take an activist approach to their profession and begin cases with a predetermined conclusion in favor of, quote-unquote, transitioning. Gender-affirming, that also is in quotes, gender-affirming physicians have also been caught on video admitting to more old-fashioned motives for such procedures, as with a 2022 expose about Vanderbilt University Medical Center's Clinic for Transgender Health, where Dr. Shane Seabold Taylor said outright that, quote, these surgeries make a lot of money, unquote. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled this summer that the federal Constitution does not bar states from restricting child transitions, leaving pro-LGBT judicial activists only recourse to try their hand at convincing state judges that bans violate state constitutions. And then in a related article, this one appearing Friday, October 10th at LifeSite News, top doctors knew sex change research was shoddy, yet still pushed them on children, report. And the summary subtitle says, private emails from transgender medicine leaders revealed they admitted the evidence behind child sex changes was quote-unquote shoddy and warned the lax standards fueled, quote, predatory practices, unquote. Again, from LifeSite News, October 10th, by Megan Brock. And this appeared first in the Daily Caller. Private emails from leaders of an influential transgender medical organization expose how ideology and consensus rather than science has undergirded the explosive growth of the child sex change industry. The emails were revealed under Freedom of Information laws. As a gender clinic boomed with patients, University of California San Francisco medical directors Maddie Deutsch and Steven Rosenthal acknowledged behind the scenes that research supporting child sex changes was shoddy and fueling predatory practices. Deutsch and Rosenthal are leaders in the field of gender medicine and co-authors of the World Professional Association of Transgender Health's highly influential medical guidance entitled The Standards of Care Version 8, which is used to inform clinical practice and healthcare systems worldwide. Rosenthal, co-founder of the U.S. Child and Adolescent Gender Center, which had a, quote, major backlog, unquote, of 230 new patients on a waiting list in the fall of 2022, records show Rosenthal said the staff's capacity was maxed out, and a colleague noted the, quote, need for far outpaces the access to care for gender diverse youth, unquote. Emails show that. Now, this is a five-page article, and this isn't time to read it all, so let me skip down a little bit. As a result of Judicial Watch's lawsuit, UCSF, and again, that is short for University of California, San Francisco, released 2,491 pages of emails. Among the revelations is that UCSF gave puberty blockers to children as young as 9. Puberty blockers are not approved by the Food and Drug Administration for the treatment of gender dysphoria. Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton, in a press release, stated, there is something rotten in the state of California. A public record email from an influential WPATH gender doctor obtained through public record request from the DCMF. That doesn't read quite right. I think a word may be left out there. Anyway, it goes on. There's a section entitled Shoddy Research. Time doesn't permit to read it all, but they cite some emails. One message said, the same shoddy research is wheeled out again and again. And Rosenthal, one of the main characters here, responded to the email by agreeing the study had, quote, significant methodological concerns. He wrote, I completely agree with you about the Tordoff and others' paper, at which I had realized the significant methodological concerns. That's referring to a paper, let me see now, authored by Diana Tordoff, that was quoted as saying evidence that puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones significantly lowered depression and suicidal tendencies among gender-confused youth. And it turns out that that article by Tordoff says no such things. Well, again, let me just give you very quick highlights. There's a section here called Overlooking Risks. Talks about the different methods of treatment and how they are dangerous. But again, this is rather technical. I don't think I'll bore you to death with this. But if you're interested, there's some very good information here. You can find it at LifeSite News, October 10th, Friday, October 10th, 2025. And the headline reads, Top Doctors Knew Sex Change Research Was Shoddy, Yet Still Pushed Them on Children. All right. And I hope that that tendency is decreasing. At least some of the flaws are showing up in mainstream media now. Then we have from the Washington Times, Not Your Parents' Nuclear. X Energy's meltdown-proof reactors poised to power more of U.S. grid. Well, this is another technical paper. I don't know if any of you are old enough, I suspect some of you are, like me, to have seen the movie, I think in 1979, called The China Syndrome. That was a fictional account of a meltdown, or near meltdown, at least, an American nuclear plant. And the amazing thing was, I think it was only 13 days later, a near meltdown, or maybe it was a partial meltdown, occurred at the Three Mile Island nuclear power plant up in Pennsylvania, very close to Harrisburg, as I recall. So it was sort of prophetic, the movie. I know that Elizabeth and I quite saw that. Oh, was it one of my old girlfriends? Now, was I dating Elizabeth? We didn't get married till 1984. Maybe I've got the wrong woman. But at any rate, I did see it in the movie theater when it first came out. I think it had Jane Fonda, Michael Douglas, and I think Jack Lemmon was in it too. Very good movie, and strangely prophetic. And of course, we've had other incidents. But this article claims that these modern-day reactors that they're designing will be meltdown-proof. And of course, a meltdown occurs when something goes wrong with the cooling system. And basically, you had a meltdown in Japan when they had that tidal wave a few years back. You probably all remember that. And it destroyed the ability to put control rods into place, is my understanding. I have read about it for quite some time, but I think that's the idea. The control rods are supposed to block some of the neutrons or whatever subatomic particles are engaged in that reaction to slow the reaction to safe limits. Well, if the electricity that controls the control rods is suddenly cut off, and I think maybe that's what happened in Japan, then, of course, the reaction can go out of control. And you can get a meltdown. It becomes so hot, it will melt right down into the earth. Now, it won't go to China, the way the movie title said, because what it'll do, it'll it'll hit the water table and cause a steam explosion and blow radioactivity all over the place. I think that's what happened in that. I think that probably was a partial meltdown in Ukraine some years back. I can't think of the name of the place now. But, again, that was big, big news. And even today, you occasionally read about that. And the one in Japan. Can't remember the name of that either. Well, it's getting old, I guess. Can't remember all those names. Maybe the brain's too full. Maybe it can't hold anymore. I hope it can. But anyway, this is an interesting article. It goes on for about 5 pages and gives you a lot of technical stuff. Of course, nuclear power got a pretty bad name from these incidents I just mentioned, particularly that Three Mile Island, even though it was way back, decades ago. This company, X Energy is the name, claims that their reactors will be totally safe, meltdown-proof. Well, I don't know. I'll have to read up on this, but I must admit I have my doubts. It says X Energy plans to jumpstart construction of brand new reactors in the next few years. Its reactors don't copy the technology and design of older models, such as Pennsylvania's Three Mile Island, where an accident caused a partial meltdown in 1979. The mishap stirred a public backlash against nuclear power that has continued for decades. So that just backs up what I was saying. This company is headquartered in Rockville, Maryland, which is just up the road a piece from Washington, D.C., in Montgomery County, Maryland. And it says they plan to have the first of its kind small modular reactor up and running on the Texas Gulf Coast early next decade. And Clay Sell, ex-Energy CEO, told the Washington Times, quote, "We expect to get the construction permit in the fourth quarter of 2026, which puts us in position to start construction in the first half of 2027. Interesting article. It says in May, President Trump announced plans for a, quote, nuclear renaissance, unquote, that called for quadrupling the nation's power output by 2050, including 300 gigawatts of net new capacity. 1 gigawatt of power can provide electricity to about 750,000 homes. And, of course, we have all these supposed electric vehicles that, if they do come about the way that their advocates suggest, will greatly overtax the current electrical generating capability of the country. So this would tie in with that nuclear idea. Skim down a little bit. I think there were a couple other things worth saying here. Mr. Sell said X Energy's simplified design plans and off-site modularized factory production of components, among the other advances, will dramatically reduce the risk of delays and cost overruns. But, and this is a quote, there are a lot of people in the country that aren't going to believe it until they see it, he said. X Energy is among several nuclear power companies gearing up to build small modular reactors. Google recently announced a deal with Kairos, K-A-I-R-O-S, Power, to develop an advanced SMR, which is short for a small modular reactor, to power its data centers, and has entered a strategic agreement with Elementi, E-L-E-M-E-N-T-I, Power, to accelerate development of 3 nuclear reactor projects. Well, a lot of technical stuff there. But, of course, there are environmental groups that remain opposed to the nuclear power, Greenpeace, Sierra Club, and so on. Fukushima, that was the Japanese one. Fukushima, that name is probably familiar. I believe it was as long ago as 2011, they mentioned it here. And Three Mile Island and Chernobyl, that was the Russian one, or Ukraine, in present boundaries. 1986. Wow, so that's almost 40 years ago. Time goes by. Well, anyway, if you would like to read more about that, this appeared in the Washington Times. The short title was Not Your Parents Nuclear, and it was in Friday, October the 3rd. Well, we get some others. I wanted to allow a little time. I often speak of folks in Massachusetts, my home state. We have one very great guy who's constantly sending me some really, really interesting articles. I just wish I had time to give you all of them. But I'll just have to give you some of the interesting headlines here. These are from mostly from the Boston Herald, the more conservative Boston newspaper, and a few of them also from the New York Post. So let's see. There's a good one here. Can't begin to read it all, but by a man you might have seen on Fox News, Victor Davis Hanson, fine author. And it talks about President Trump's achievements on immigration, on his successes in making peace in certain areas of the world that were at war. And not the least, of course, is the Middle East just in the last few days. We certainly hope that that will turn out to be a lasting peace, but you never know. And certainly in the book of Revelation, it doesn't sound like it's a lasting peace, but maybe it will be for a while. And this was a nice article from Victor Davis Hanson from, I believe, the... let me see now. Well, he's a syndicated columnist. Could have been from either the New York Post or the Boston Herald. Dated September 8th, about a month ago. And then we had on August 29th, one I hadn't had the chance to get to, major victory for 9/11 families. Now Al-Qaeda's Boston terror cell can be probed. The 9/11 tragedy will not end with a whimper. In a stunning 45-page ruling, Manhattan federal judge George, I think that's a B, Daniels, denied Saudi Arabia's motion yesterday to throw out a lawsuit filed by loved ones of the September 11, 2001 terror attacks. Now, time doesn't permit us to go into all the ins and outs of this. Of course, a lot of people, and I've read some good books on this topic, say that things were not what they seemed on September 11, 2001. Nevertheless, there were a bunch of Saudi guys on those flights. And if they weren't responsible, what were they doing there? So, and of course, it was that thing with George W. Bush, who managed to ship off a whole bunch of Saudi royal family people back to Saudi Arabia within a few days of the 9/11 tragedy. Why did they get out of the country so fast? Don't know. Requires more investigations. Then we have some good ones. This is Michael Goodwin, a little article that appeared in the New York Post Sunday, September 14th, entitled Message to Lefty, Killers is Clear. And it is talking about the murder of Charlie Kirk. Predictable reaction to the horrible murder of Charlie Kirk and Ron. Among legacy media outlets has been to condemn the ugly tenor of America's political debate and call for a timeout. On its face, the plea sounds reasonable enough, but it rests in the false idea of both-sidism as if left and right are equally to blame for the frightening rise of political violence. Good article. We just don't have the time to go through it in depth here, but it, of course, talks about the constant verbal attacks by the left and the consequent reactions, including quite possibly the murder of Charlie Kirk. And there's a good article by Howie Carr, a columnist for the Boston Herald on September 12th. called Liberalism is a Mental Disorder. Charlie Kirk was assassinated Wednesday. He was the latest victim of the bloodthirsty cult that so much of the Democratic Party is devolved into. And please, spare me the preposterous comparisons to January 6th, when the only death was of an unarmed female Air Force veteran who was laughing as she was gunned down in cold blood by a racist cop who was then given multiple awards by Democrats. Yes, political violence is under control in the United States. Shall we list some of the recent victims of attempted assassinations by domestic terrorists? And I see our time is about up, but he says, okay, here's a list. President Donald J. Trump survived two attempted assassinations. Governor Ron DeSantis shot at during congressional baseball practice in 2017. Representative Steve Scalise of Louisiana, critically wounded in the same attack. Senator Rand Paul shot at in the same attack, then assaulted in 2020 while leaving the White House, then almost murdered by a homicidal neighbor in Kentucky. Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh, stalked by a transgender outside his home in 2022. Then Representative Lee Zeldin, and now EPA Administrator, attacked on the campaign trail by a man with a knife in 2022. And now, Charlie Kirk, slain by an individual who had scrawled transgender and anti-fascist slogans on his weapon and ammunition. What do they all have in common? They are or were conservatives, that is, the victims, if not Republicans. I can only think of one prominent National Democrat who's been similarly threatened with murder. Governor Josh Shapiro of Pennsylvania. They tried to set the governor's mansion in Harrisburg on fire while he and his family were sleeping. Shapiro is Jewish and pro-Israel. As far as the Democrat death cult is concerned, Shapiro may not exactly be a Republican, but his views were close enough to the GOP that he deserved to die. And that's by Howie Carr from the Boston Herald, September 12th. Well, our time is up, and my voice is just about gone, so that's good timing. Thank you for listening to The Divided Kingdom. Write to me if you get a chance. Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Thanks, and good night.